So opening up our session is Christopher Hudala. Chris received his PhD in analytical chemistry from the University of California, Santa Barbara, specializing in solid phase NMR spectroscopy. After a postdoctoral fellowship in the research position at the University of Nebraska, at the Epley Cancer Institute, Chris went on to spend 14 years with the Waters Corporation. There he worked on the design and development of novel chromatographic stationary phases and developed applications to demonstrate and promote their capabilities. With his expertise in analytical chemistry, he co-founded ProVerde Laboratories in Milford, Massachusetts, where he is currently the chief science officer. At ProVerde Laboratories is a full-service analytical laboratory utilizing the most current analytical testing methodologies available to provide testing, research, and consulting services for cannabis and hemp industries. So please welcome Chris Hudala.
All right, first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to share some of the work that we do. When I think about vaping, because we were established as a cannabis lab, there's certain cannabis connotations that come to that. But as I started working with people in other aspects, including FDA and CDC, I realized that some of the issues that we face on a day-to-day basis not only impact the cannabis industry, but the nicotine vapes as well. And so I kind of, we'll talk about them combined. First of all, I want to make sure this is a discussion. I don't want this to be a lecture, so please feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, be interactive. But the vaping industry is a huge industry, and it's growing very rapidly, over $12.4 billion in 2019. That's a lot of money. There's a lot of money behind this. And we see that it's growing rapidly. In 2019, 14% of high school seniors admitted to vaping marijuana. So this is not just an adult issue. This is particularly concerning for minors who are being exposed to this. The growth rate for vaping is expected to go to almost $68 billion in 2027. So this is a huge thing. In this vaping industry, so a long time ago, they would just do, for marijuana, they would do simple extracts and put it in a vape pen. But now we see that there's new formulations, new additives, new equipment that are being used. And all this is being done, for the most part, in an unregulated environment. And so with that comes new health concerns. We see a lot of pesticides. We see different hardware that is being produced on the market for vaping products. And so we see a lot of vaping hazards that were not in the marketplace 2 to 3 years ago. So it's changing very rapidly, which makes it difficult to keep up with. Recently, you've seen in the news that there have been a lot of issues with vaping hazards, including several deaths. And so the CDC, everybody has come up with the names of it, e-cigarette or vaping-associated lung injury, calling it E-Valley. But there's all these different acronyms, because you know, as scientists, we love our acronyms. To describe the same issue is that people are getting sick, that these are doing harm to the public. There's been over 2,700 cases that resulted in hospitalization, over 57 deaths, youngest one being a 15-year-old. There's been 152 THC-containing products that were reported by patients that were admitted. Frequently, when we see in the news they're talking about these issues, they very commonly refer to these as THC-related. And I'll talk a little bit more about that and why these acute cases are thought to be a result of vitamin E acetate that was used as an additive. Of course, we know that vitamin E acetate is great for you. It's a great nutritional supplement. It's great in a topical. So why wouldn't it be good in your lungs? Well, apparently it's not. And so I think that a lot of the cases we've seen, especially that surround fatalities, have been related to the vitamin E acetate. But we see other contaminants that can be contributing factors, pesticides, heavy metals, different flavorings, other additives, propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin. We don't know what the long-term exposure, risk, and hazards are for these. There's been very little study on these. When you talk about putting these compounds in your lungs, and furthermore, you're putting them in your lungs after they've been heated with potential degradant products. One of the things that has happened is a lot of the states in response to these concerns have banned vape products. Massachusetts, they banned all vape products, or so they thought. What they did is they banned all regulated, produced, tested vape products, which just drove consumers to the black market. So about a year ago, we started seeing a lot more samples coming through our lab that were from the black market, and to make things worse, our regulators don't want to offend anybody, so instead of calling them black market products, they call them informal market products. But I break them down into three categories: electronic nicotine delivery systems, so that would be propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin with nicotine in them. Oftentimes they produce these same type of products with no nicotine in it, just flavors. Very attractive to children. You can't tell me that bubble gum and cotton candy flavors are targeted at an adult crowd. And then we see the cannabis-based vape products. Now, the FDA is starting to regulate the electronic nicotine delivery systems, but the other flavor-only or the cannabis are, for the most part, unregulated, unless they're regulated at the state level. And then you have variations from state to state. Some of these vape devices are very complicated, and I've just included a couple different styles, but they have, of course, the e-liquid, which we all think about when we talk about some of the hazards. But there's the additives that can be in there. There's different flavorings. There's the cartridge itself, atomizers, tank systems, drip systems, batteries. There's all these different components, and they all could propose a certain amount of hazard. Certainly, we've seen videos where an e-cigarette blows up in somebody's pocket on an airplane. I mean, there are hazards associated with the battery. I'm not going to really worry about those right now. There are other contaminants that can come from the other hardware components within the system, whether it's the tip or the cartridge itself, the glass. There's been some heavy metal contamination that has been thought to come from some of these components. But the ones that are really most concerning to me are the ones that are really chemical, with the e-liquids, the additives that they're using, the flavorings, and things like that. We know that in that liquid, we've seen a lot of pesticides, different process solvents. Additives are very common, whether it's propylene glycol, glycerin, polyethylene glycol, and then somebody's bright idea to add vitamin E acetate, and then the flavorings. As I said, we know very little about how these compounds interact in our lungs, but we know even less about it once they've been heated and have potential degradation products. We also see for the cannabis and hemp industry that people are starting to do a lot more of these vape products that are all based on some kind of primary extraction technology, typically ethanol, CO2, or hydrocarbon. But afterwards, you have an extract which oftentimes is not in a very convenient format to interact with the hardware. And so there's a lot of post-extraction processing, winterization, distillation, and purification. One of the things when we started seeing, and this has only been probably within the last year, we start to see new peaks in our chromatography that we never saw 4 years ago, 2 years ago. These are new peaks. And so we've been doing a lot of work to try and identify these things, and what we think is happening is that under the conditions under which people are processing these extracts, they're actually creating isomers or other degradation products, which are both unknown in terms of what they are, but they're also unknown in terms of what their efficacy or toxicity is. This is just an example of one of those distillates. It was a hemp-based extract, and oftentimes people are doing these distillation processes to try and remove the delta-9 THC. And so they're really excited when they've gotten rid of that delta-9 THC peak. But oftentimes what happens as a result is you get the formation of new peaks that are unknown. Now, this is results. This was actually part of a collaboration with Waters Corporation using some high-res mass spec, and we show that these are exact mass isomers of the delta-9 THC, and still we don't know what they are. So again, I still question, are those safe compounds? A lot of the producers, ironically, are very excited when they see this because now they have a novel product, something that nobody else has. We see products that are on the market now with delta-10 THC. We never saw those 2 years ago. One producer I asked, I said, how did you get the delta-10 THC? He says, don't really know. He says, I grow in California, And during the forest fires, my crop got hit with fire retardants, and this was the resulting product. I said, do you think that's safe? I don't know. I don't know that it's not, but I certainly wouldn't want to risk giving it to somebody because we don't know what it is, how it interacts. The other thing is that it's getting more common now to have these extracts, which are 88% pure, 89% pure. And inevitably, as a cannabis lab, people come back to me and say, well, hey, what's the other 12%? Well, to identify that other 12% is a lot of work. And, you know, it can be fairly expensive, but we have pursued some of that. And we started showing the complexity of some of these raw extracts with, in some cases, over 200 peaks. These are not contaminants. These are phytochemical constituents that have been extracted from the plant. And so understanding the properties of these extracts and how they interact with the vape hardware and how they're going to interact with the human body is sometimes pretty hard to fathom how we're ever going to understand that. This is an example of one of the cartridges that we tested. There's 17 pesticides that we identified. In Massachusetts, the limit for any pesticide is 10 parts per billion, and you can see that some of them are in the hundreds of thousands of parts per billion. Now, the producer of this product had the audacity to put pesticide-free on his label. It's so bad, and this isn't funny, but our lab jokes that instead of pesticide-free, it should say free pesticides. This is another example, another informal market product where we saw a large concentration of microbutanol. And as I said before, we have to worry about the thermal degradation products. Microbutanol, which has very low toxicity when ingested, when heated, can actually degrade with one of the compounds being hydrogen cyanide. That's not something you want going in your lungs. This, of course, is the vitamin E acetate. This is one of the vape cartridges that has been associated with some of the acute health issues for people using these cartridges. This is just another example with the polyethylene glycol, but we see them with the propylene glycol and the vegetable glycerin as well. There's also a lot with the hemp industry that a lot of products are being based on CBD isolate. So CBD isolate, you're taking the hemp plant, you're extracting the CBD, you're purifying it to pharmaceutical grade, sometimes 99.9%+ purity, and then you're going back and you're adding it to other components to create other tinctures or products, but we see vape pens that are created on this as well. And so normally when I see CBD isolate, it's usually being recrystallized out of some organic solvents, which would normally appear here in a residual solvent. Sometimes you might see heptane, there is some heptane in there, but I see all these other peaks, which are concerning because these peaks really correlate with solvents that are generally recognized as more toxic, that have known carcinogenic properties. So I contacted the manufacturer and I said, what did you do? Because this doesn't look safe. And so he sent me a picture of what he used for this process. He's using varnish remover. These are actual examples. People are actually using this. I offered to coach him on how to make a better product, how not to use that, what solvents to use, and he didn't want to have the discussion because he thought I was going to get him in trouble. But so we see this all the time in our lab. This is another example of a cartridge that had a signal with benzene, and it wasn't a huge signal, but it was above the regulatory limits. And so the producer argued with me, said absolutely not. He's had his methanol tested, he said it's ethanol tested, he's tested everything in his process, and so we as a lab have to be wrong. So he submitted another sample, and again, I measured benzene, and so we started working with him and said, well, what else is in your process? And after talking to him, realized that he goes through a filtration step, which uses like a carbon black material, so he submitted a sample of that, and we tested that for benzene, and it was 70 ppm benzene, so even though he had created a nice, pure product, in the additional processing steps, he had introduced contamination through that. Then we talk about the hardware. Those were all chemical, but we have seen multiple cases where we're seeing heavy metals that are coming either through the coil or the solder that's used. We're not exactly sure where all the contaminants are coming from. There's been some work done in California that tends to indicate that the heavy metals are coming out of the cartridges themselves. But what we've done is we've actually taken these vape pens and we've hooked them up to a fairly rudimentary smoking machine to collect the vapor on these cartridges And then we analyze these cartridges for heavy metal. And what we see is aluminum, copper, nickel, and chromium. So these are all consistent with what would be from a heating coil. But we've also seen a couple cases where it was more consistent with lead or solder. But whatever it is, these oils, which were free from metal contaminants before they were filled into the cartridge, are now either introducing metal contaminants into the oil itself or into the lungs of the person using them through the vaporization of metals during the vaping process. This is just a last example. When producers are making their cannabis products, or this could probably also be a nicotine product, they're thinking about what they're actually putting into it, but they're not thinking about the whole picture. We were working with a producer who was making some novel vaping device hardware, and in it there was a metal grate that was in the flow path. And we convinced him just to start looking at all the components of the system, and we did this by, I think this one was by Headspace gas chromatography, but what we started seeing is that there were all these patterns of carbon analogs that would be probably indicative of cutting fluid or lubricant or something like that. We never really identified what they were, but they shouldn't have been in the flow path of the device. And so we're trying to get producers to start looking at their process, not just their extraction, but from sourcing their raw materials, sourcing their hardware. Almost all the hardware comes out of China. Some of it's very high quality, some of it's really poor quality. The problem is they look exactly the same, and you don't know how to tell the difference. So just to summarize, the vape market is growing very, very rapidly. While the nicotine vapes are going to be more heavily regulated by the FDA, that still leaves a lot of unregulated territory for the cannabis or the flavor-only vapes. Very little regulation on the state-to-state level. I do see that most states now have implemented the requirement for vitamin E acetate testing. We will probably never see that contamination again. Somebody made a stupid mistake not knowing what they were doing in their processing. We'll probably never see it again. The black market vapes are still very pervasive. They're still probably a quarter of the price of if you go to a medical marijuana dispensary to buy a vape, high quality vape cartridge. They're about a quarter of that price on the black market. So it's a lot more affordable to minors, which is where these hazards are going. And then we have limited toxicity information on these contaminants. You know, how do they impact us from a toxicological standpoint, and especially when you start looking at the flavorings. Certainly the consumer safety would benefit from additional oversight, and that's something that I hope that we can start talking about here. So with that, we got some great people in our lab that I want to acknowledge for doing some of the work, and then I would like to also thank you and take any questions.
Thank you very much, Chris. We have time for questions. Please.
Hi. Robert Thomas, educator, independent consultant, and writer in the field of heavy metals. Can you expand on analyzing liquid as opposed to analyzing the aerosol? And can you give us a little more information about the smoking, the simple smoking device that you use to sample the aerosol?
Sure. It was probably wholly inappropriate. So we were just trying to do some proof of concept work. We literally just hooked the vape pens up to a home-built smoking machine that was hooked up to a vacuum pump. We were collecting the vapor on, basically it was a cotton filter. We analyzed the cotton filters in as blanks, as well as after having gone through a vape session. The draw on the vacuum and the duration was as good as we could, simulated the duration and intensity of what a consumer would draw. Even in consumers, that varies dramatically. How people will take a little puff, other people will, you know, suck the whole thing down. I mean, so there's a lot of variability there. But we were able to get enough data just from that to understand that there are metals that are coming off of that. When we're doing the vape oil itself, it's more like traditional, where we're taking the oil and doing just a traditional digestion of the oil before ICP-MS analysis.
Okay.
Any other questions, follow-up questions?
Just want to add to that question of analyzing for ingredients in formulation versus in aerosol. So there's a vaping working group within the tobacco industry. So similar to AOAC, CARESTA is the industry standardization body for the global tobacco. So that should be with Philip Morris for 20 years prior to returning Morris. And they already have a working group that's focused on e-vapor products. They have methods on rotary and linear smoking machines for vaping products to collect smoke, aerosol, to be able to analyze for nicotine or flavor ingredients, possibly metals as well. But it includes the various topography that typically would test smoke vaping products. So those procedures already exist within the CARESTA organization. And that would be a room hanging fruit for this group within AOC if we start to look at more like smokable and vaping products to tap into those methods. So those particles already exist.
Okay, thanks.
Actually, a comment is a follow on to that. I'm working on a new book, which is Heavy Metals and Cannabis and Hemp. And one of the contributors to my book is the Inorganic Tobacco Group at CDC. And I've been working with them to fully understand how they actually, carry out this analysis. And it's interesting that they believe some of the data that's in the public domain is probably erroneous, because they believe the contamination and cleanliness issues when you're trying to analyze an aerosol, particularly at 250 degrees Celsius, there's a good chance that the materials and the components and the flask and whatever they're using, that they're getting contamination, because many of the researchers are putting out information that they're finding cadmium, arsenic, and other metals, which the CDC believes is not actually in the device. So it's just a comment, but it will actually be a chapter in my new book.
We have actually done some digestion with weak acid in the chamber that has never seen any cannabis oil, then we do detect cadmium arsenic and lead in those, but they've never seen any oils. These are new cartridges. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.